Thursday, we get you for 3 hours today here on Sports Talk, along with Adrian Broaddus, who filled in for me yesterday. Thank you for that, Adrian. And of course, it was a slow day yesterday. Nothing happened, as is customary whenever I take days off. But, you know, that's just how things work sometimes. The Kevin Baker story dropped minutes before the show yesterday, sent shockwaves around the local sports world, and Adrian was there to talk all about it. That's just how it goes, everybody. I've got some thoughts on that, but, man, what a show we have for you today. It is going to be loaded. Dave DeFore is going to be with us coming up in about a little less than 20 minutes from now. Mike Greenberg, Greeny, is going to join us at the top of our 5 o'clock hour. Following Greeny, we get the chance to talk to one of our favorites. In fact, it's been a while since Jadrian Taylor has been on the show, so we're looking forward to having him drop by our 600 ESPN El Paso River Oaks Property Schoolyard Sports Studios here at 520. It's got a good ring to it. I like that. And then coming up at 6 o'clock, we are going to get a chance to hear from Dustin Dix, the director of racetrack operations from Sunland Park Racetrack and Casino. He'll wrap up the year for us and pretty much tell us the highlights of the 2023 racing season. So we'll do all that coming up for you today over the next 3 hours. We'll get to phone calls as well at 505-6009. That is 505-6009. Tweet the show, 600 ESPN El Paso on Twitter. That is 600 ESPN El Paso on Twitter. And you can message us on our free mobile app. You can listen in and chat in real time at 600 ESPN El Paso, our mobile app powered by First American Bank. Adrian, we got a lot going on today, don't we?
We definitely do, Steve. It's a busy sports weekend. Masters week. Masters got underway today. I was watching and listening to a lot of golf. Thanks to Fred Albers, who joined us yesterday from Augusta. He was on the call today for Masters radio action. So just a lot of great stuff happening in the world of sports. UFC 287 around the corner. And NBA finishes up the regular season this weekend as well. So, yeah, we're getting everybody ready for a big weekend. And it's only Thursday. We got two big shows ahead of us.
Yes, we do. There is no doubt about it. And by the way, speaking of, you know, big things going on, look at the Masters right now. Looking at the Masters leaderboard through day one. And unfortunately for Tiger, he finished 2 over par. So Tiger's got work to do just to try to make the cut, because right now the leaders are in at 7 under par. We have a 3-way tie at 7 under par. And Brooks Koepka is one of the three. So going to be very interested to see how this plays out over the next 3 days, aren't you?
Yes, definitely. I mean, going into the Masters, there's kind of the big three that everybody's talking about. John Rahm, who's atop the leaderboard as well, tied for first. You also have Scottie Scheffler, who's trying to round out his day. He's 4 under par. He's trending upward right now. And you also have Rory McIlroy, who everybody considers, you know, those three guys, the top of the sport of golf right now. I'm curious how this weekend will look when you combine those guys, the guys who are kind of, you know, on the outside looking in, like Cameron Young, and then you throw the LIV guys in the mix, and you have Brooks Koepka already tied for first place after winning the LIV tournament last weekend. So exciting times if you're a golf fan. This is the best weekend there is. And you know, for Tiger, I know that he had a tough day, but I thought he actually was walking around a little bit better. It's just his putting that's just not there right now, and hopefully he can change that. It's going to be bad conditions all weekend long, Steve. Like Saturday, Sunday, going to be horrible out at Augusta.
First off, Rory is 1 over through 14. Not exactly like he's lighting it up either. Scottie Scheffler, you mentioned it. He's right now at 4 under par. How about that Masters green Nike polo he's sporting here today in day one of the Masters?
Yeah, flexing on them right now. He's number one in the world. He wants to defend the Masters to become the fourth golfer in history, only the fourth golfer in history to actually successfully defend the Masters. You know, he would enter great territory, as Tiger Woods is among one of those three.
McIlroy just sank about a 10-foot birdie putt on 15, so he is now back to even par. And this is big for him because he birdied 10, bogeyed 11, birdied 15. So Rory's been kind of battling the course today. He's been up and down, really, to start his first round.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that it's a kind of a tough start for Rory McIlroy. They have to get the score that they would like early on into the tournament because, like I was mentioning, the course is going to look horrible Saturday, Sunday. So, you know, the score's like 7 under par. Maybe we don't see that carry into the weekend if the conditions are as bad as they make it seem.
Well, and that's also the question, too, when you look at what this weekend is going to be like, you know, not just for the golf conditions, but you know, from a weather standpoint, that's going to be kind of interesting because rain Saturday, and really it starts tomorrow. There's rain in the evening tomorrow, but look at this: they go from 80 degrees tomorrow to 50 on Saturday, and then 59 on Sunday, and more rain. I mean, they might finish this tournament on Monday. It's very possible that this thing gets rained out through the weekend, and maybe they finish it on Monday.
Yeah, Fred Albers was even talking about the possibility of a Tuesday finish, yep, knowing how bad Sunday and Monday are projecting to be at Augusta. Mm-hmm. So hopefully Mother Nature will allow this tournament to be played. Maybe there's some kind of changing in times or something along those lines, but hey, if you're a golf fan, you might have to carve out some time Monday to watch some Masters golf.
Yeah, Saturday, Sunday looks miserable out in Augusta. It really does. It looks like rain galore. We might be spending Saturday, Sunday watching the Masters that Tiger won a few years back. That might end up being what CBS decides to do with their programming because, let's be honest, you give us that particular Masters as a throwback a few years ago, that probably would get better ratings than some of the other tournaments that they would put on.
I would watch it. I'd watch it probably from, you know, hole three on and watch Francesco Molinari, you know, hit that shot into the water where everybody's holding, yep, their breath, and then Tiger hits the next shot and it's right on the money and he ends up winning it after that, coming rallying back and just looking so dominant in 2019. My favorite Masters of all time. I don't think there's ever going to be one close to that one, but you know, this one should be a lot of fun knowing that we're mixing PGA Tour players with LIV golf players. Speaking of Tiger, yep, they said last night at the dinner, he and you know, Phil did not talk to each other. So
really,
yeah, Tiger and Phil, we know that those guys have some kind of a rivalry. And you know, since Phil Mickelson made the change over to LIV, I think there's been animosity between the two.
So Tiger's done with him. Look
at
that.
Maybe.
By the way, John Rahm, Victor Hovland, really now tied on the leaderboard along with Brooks Koepka. It's an interesting start, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, 25-year-old Victor Hovland, he's trended upward in terms of the world of golf over the past couple years, and John Rahm is just atop the world. So I feel like if you're looking for star power, it's Rahm. Koepka has a lot to prove. Hovland, he's kind of the newcomer as far as those three who are leading the scoreboard right now.
If there is a veteran sleeper that always plays this course well that has been predicted to win in years past that you have to keep an eye on, keep an eye on Jason Day. Do it. He's 5 under, shot a 67 today, and Jason Day is always somebody that intrigues me. He's a little older, 35 years of age, but I'm telling you, certain guys are made for this course. Day's one of those players.
I would totally agree with that. Some younger guys I'm a big fan of. Cameron Smith, who went over to the LIV Golf Tour League. He's 2 under. He's 15th right now, but he's somebody who you could watch over the weekend, especially if the conditions worsen. I like when he plays, you know, when there's kind of adversity with the weather. Matt Fitzpatrick had an excellent year last year, really came on to the scene. Maybe he can have a great weekend here at Augusta and earn a green jacket to go along with his major win last year at the Open.
Yeah, that would be another great storyline to keep an eye on. So, yeah, that's some good stuff, folks. It really is. By the way, Jason Day did not play at Augusta last year, missed the cut the year before. So, I mean, you know, you go back and look at this and say, man, you know, in over the years, you know, he's been one of those golfers that's been, you know, been doing this a long time, has been among the leaders, but you know, hasn't played particularly well. Tied for fifth in 2018 at the 2019 Masters, finished tied for fifth. So, you know, he's somebody that'll be that has the potential to kind of sneak in there and be there on this weekend.
Yeah, that's a good name right there. I'm curious to see, since he hasn't played at the at Augusta, you know, in the past couple years, and you know, two years ago getting missing the cut. I'm curious to see how he approaches this weekend, and I'm sure for all these guys, it's urgency early on, knowing the conditions are going to be what they are Saturday, Sunday. You can't change that, but you can definitely control what you do here Thursday, Friday, going into the weekend.
12 past as we get going here on Sports Talk. What was the reaction yesterday locally around the Kevin Baker decision to resign as head coach of the UTEP women's basketball team?
So, of course, there's the outlandish conspiracy theorists out there who want to say that UTEP got Rodney Terried again, and he's going to go off to another school and take on another job. But, you know, I think that what we kept going back to was the statement that was released by UTEP, and specifically the wording that was used by Kevin Baker. And I think that we were settling on the fact that this was maybe the time in Kevin Baker's personal life where he wanted to turn the page and go on to something else, whatever that next chapter of his life is. But I felt like the wording of his statement itself really told you a lot. The one thing that I will say, the fans were bummed out knowing that this team, the nucleus that they had from this past year and the returners that they could potentially have going into next year, could really show you that they could have a Conference USA title contender. And now that's you know, uncertain right now. UTEP women's basketball is now approaching an offseason of uncertainty, and it starts with filling that head coaching vacancy.
I don't know if Kevin would come on the show with us if he's still in town, but we've had him on for so many years, and he's been such a good friend of the program and friend of the station. That I would, we'll reach out. We'll see if we can get Coach Baker to come on with us and maybe give us a you know, one-on-one, a little more detail about everything and really the effects that led to this decision yesterday.
Yeah, that'd be great. And I feel like, you know, I kept going back to something that I'll say again. I just really hope that statement was genuine, and knowing him off the court, knowing him just from our interviews here in our studios, I would just say that I'm trusting that he is a genuine person, and he meant everything that he said yesterday in that statement and his resignation from UTEP.
I don't know if he'll ever, you know, not coach again. There might come a point down the road where he wants to get back into it at some level, but I truthfully believe that this is not to take another job. I think this is simply the fact that there's a lot of things going on, and at this point, you know, sometimes life is bigger than basketball, and life is, you know, there's other things that really someone's, you know, off the court career will look at and say, you know what, this is bigger than the game. It's bigger than everything. So I think that's just the case with Kevin Baker. I really do. I don't think this has anything to do with going someplace else. I think this is simply a situation to where, you know, he weighed his options and decided that there's some stuff personally going on, and he wants to take care of it and is good where he's at. And, hey, you talk about going out on top. You had your first 20-win season in the 6 years you were here. You took him to the postseason in the WNIT. That's probably a good way to leave.
And UTEP's in a great place right now. As far as the program goes on the women's basketball side, I feel like this position is desirable. And I feel like if a coach steps in, they'll actually be more motivated to step in and try to re-recruit the current players on the roster, knowing that there's a real opportunity for this team to stay a Conference USA contender if the players stay and if they can keep this nucleus intact. I really like this squad, and I don't want them to lose out on any kind of momentum over this offseason. If they do, well, it's time to hit the reset button on the women's basketball program, and they'll start to rebuild again.
We could talk more about it during the show. In the meantime, we're just getting started. When we come back, Adrian and I will go one-on-one with Dave DeFore, talk some NBA with the playoffs right around the corner. That's all coming up on a big show today as we go to Charlie One and get our first traffic update of our Thursday commute. And welcome back, everybody, as we continue here on Sports Talk. Adrian, I am so excited about our next guest. We haven't had him on in a while. I mean, why? What happened? How do we lose touch with Dave DeFore until now when the playoffs are about to start?
Yeah, but you know, you never lose out on Dave DeFore when you subscribe to The Athletic. That's what I love about the great subscription that they have at The Athletic. Not only do you get to read all the great content, but you get to listen to some of the great podcasts like Dave DeFore has with the NBA Athletic podcast, and obviously the Daily Ding. And it's always great to chat with him here on the show, especially with the NBA really heating up right now.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. So without any further ado, let's welcome in host and producer from The Athletic, a man that does it all when it comes to hoops. Oh, and by the way, in his past life, he was a professional wrestler. Dave DeFore is with us right now. You can follow on Twitter at Dave DeFore NBA. That's D-U-F-O-U-R NBA on Twitter. Good to have you back. Dave, how you been?
Good to be back. What an intro. My God, I don't know if I've ever felt so welcome on a radio show in my life. It's amazing. Thank you very much for having me back. And you know what? He's right. We haven't lost touch because when I come back, it's just like I was here yesterday. This season has been nuts. That's why we haven't spoken. It has been an absolutely absurd season, and I've been incredibly busy. That's it. It's on me.
Okay, we'll take that, but we have part of this to blame too, but we're not worried about that. We've got you. That's the most important thing. And by the way, it has been incredibly absurd. Will this postseason be as wild as the regular season has been?
I don't think so, at least in the East. And I do think we're going to get some battles in the East, but it feels like the Bucks are just better than everybody else. And it feels a little bit more predictable come playoff time. I just don't know if the Knicks can sustain what they've done. Although, having a top-five offense for this team is kind of crazy. I mean, they've been really good down the stretch especially. But Cleveland's defense is just so good, and I think they're going to be matching up. And so it's just going to be tough for them. I think the West is still wide open, though.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about we'll come back to the East because I'm as a Knicks fan – I have a lot to say on this topic, but let's talk about the West for a second, because for years, we've always looked at the West as the cream of the crop, and the East was just a bad excuse to have a bunch of teams play in the postseason. Have we flipped the script, in your opinion, or do we still look at a stacked West where the teams at the bottom are the most intriguing because of all the star power that after load management is over, we'll have a chance to really gear up for the postseason?
I think you kind of hit the nail right on the head. The West is wide open because it's stacked. Now, the top of the East is also stacked. Like, I think that the top of the East sits very, very nicely with the top of the West as far as competitive balance goes. But it's just the rest of the East is awful. And the very bottom of the West is terrible, too. Let's not make any mistakes. But I just think from 10, 11 to 1 in a seven-game series, you know, like Oklahoma City, they're young. They don't have the juice to win a seven-game series. But they're not getting swept. You know, like, it just feels like, as we have progressed in the last few years, and some of these heliocentric stars like LeBron has gotten older, and you know, the Warriors are no longer unbeatable. Kevin Durant has had the injury issues, and we see these younger guys coming up, and we see the talent a little bit more spread out around the league. It's all about styles now. And how do you match up against your one matchup? The West it epitomizes that. Whereas in the East, I can tell you, the Bucks, they can just bum rush everybody. They can do what they do. Whereas in the West, when you look at the matchups, Denver Nuggets, you think, wow, they may not have the defense for, like, Warriors offense. The truth is, the Warriors may not have a defense for the Nuggets offense. And so each individual matchup could swing either way just based on a variable or two because the teams are also clustered together and close. And this is where the regular season has now got more value because of this play-in that they added a couple years ago. I mean, what an incredible change that has improved the quality of the product overall, because – usually right now, if there were teams that had good or great players that were just out of it, they would have shut it down a long time ago. They would have done what Portland did. But meanwhile, we've still got Luka and Kyrie out there doing ridiculous stuff, like Kyrie scoring 19 in the fourth quarter yesterday to save their season. You know, LeBron playing on one foot on a back-to-back, you know, just he scored 30 points in the second half last night. Of course, they lost, but still, you know, we're getting some amazing performances. But a lot of that is because I think every single team feels like if we can just get to the playoffs, we've got a shot.
Fixating on the Mavericks for a second, Dave, they're a team that I find very fascinating. Yesterday was kind of that do-or-die situation, and you give props to Kyrie for what he did in the fourth and Luka for just trying to will that team to victory in that one. But it's so interesting that we're talking right now on April 6th about the Dallas Mavericks barely trying to make the play-in tournament when that trade happened for Kyrie. I was thinking in my head, they're a lock for a fifth or sixth seed. Nonetheless, we're talking about them outside looking in. What happened with them this season?
Oh, man, I think that you're an optimist. You must really be an optimist amongst your friends, because I saw that trade and I'm immediately thinking, oh, this is the beginning of the end. Luka Doncic is leaving. You know, that's where I'm looking with that trade. Now, as far as the on-the-court thing, I never expected them to figure it out in the regular season. I did not expect them to lose this many games. I think that they've played like the majority of their games, 80% of their games since Kyrie's gotten there, have been crunch time games. So they are not separating on offense, and they're obviously getting no stops on defense. That doesn't work in the regular season. Like, you actually need a solid defense to have regular season success. This is where, like, the Bucks for years, they can just churn out these one seeds because their baseline defense is, you know, top eight. That's pretty good. So as long as your offense is okay, you're going to be okay. But Dallas doesn't have that to fall back on. And so between that and trying to figure out how to add a guy like Kyrie into the mix, although I think Kyrie's not been really the problem, at least offensively. Maybe a little bit too passive early on down the stretch, but recently he's been really great down the stretch for them. To a certain degree, better than Luka in fourth quarters, a little bit more fresh. But that's a team that I think, when they made this trade, they're thinking, okay, we get Kyrie, we get to the playoffs, and then we got Kyrie and Luka, and we can win any series. And they may be right there. See, this is the thing. I mean, if Brooklyn could have held it together and kept Kyrie and Kevin Durant, I could take Brooklyn in any series, because those two guys in the playoffs have shown time and time and time again that they can get you 25 to 35 every single game. And that's really what the playoffs is all about. Can you win your individual matchup? Can you hit those mid-range shots that they're going to give you? Kevin Durant's shooting 60% on mid-rangers, right, you know, this season. And obviously Kyrie is somewhere close to that. So if they had not blown it up. But that's the same vision, but in Dallas. So I think that they probably internally expected to struggle a little bit, try to figure things out, but not this much.
Dave DeFore is the host and producer from The Athletic, joins us here on Sports Talk as we continue. All right, I'm looking at teams like the Suns, the Clippers, the Warriors, and the Lakers. Those four teams, they have a ridiculous collection of star power, Hall of Fame power on each of those rosters. And we're talking right now, as we have you on the show, the 4, the 5, the 6, and the 7 in the Western Conference. You tell me, when you look at those four teams, which one or teams do you think have the best chance to get to the Western Conference Finals when it's all said and done, Dave?
Well, you know me pretty well at this point, so this is not going to shock you. But even though Andrew Wiggins has missed 20-something games, I still think the Warriors can make the finals. I refuse to disbelieve in Steph Curry. I can't do it. And when you add Wiggins to the mix, you already see what they look like, that they look a little bit better with Gary Payton out there. Now you add Wiggins into the mix, and it slides guys back into the role that they're supposed to be playing. I mean, I just think the Warriors, their system works. They've got the guys for it. They've been there before. None of them choke under pressure somehow. And they just won the title. It's not like these guys don't know how to do it. So I think out of that group, I would lean Warriors, but again, Kevin Durant is playing at an MVP level. The issue Phoenix has is depth. If anyone suffers any injury, they're out. Warriors, same way. I mean, if Steph Curry tweaks an ankle, they're done. That's the margin every single one of those teams is working on. Lakers, you know, they're so much better since the trade deadline, and they've been playing decent basketball. You know, the schedule caught them against the Clippers last night. That was a rough one. That's a team that probably scares the hell out of a bunch of teams because they've got size, they've got LeBron. Austin Reeves has shown himself to be a pretty good playmaker and scorer. So that just kind of came up out of nowhere for a lot of teams this year, scouting the Lakers. And then with the Clippers, you've got Kawhi Leonard, who is a killer, but without Paul George, I just don't believe in their chances in the playoffs. I need to see him back, see him healthy, and know that he's going to be around to have any sort of belief in them. So if I was ranking them, I'm probably going Warriors, Suns, Lakers, Clippers right now.
More with Dave as we continue here on Sports Talk, but first let's get right back to Adrian Broaddus standing by. He's got a bottom of the hour Sports Center update. All right, Adrian, thank you very much. Again, Dave DeFore with us from The Athletic, covers the NBA. We're talking NBA playoffs. Adrian, let's get right back to you.
Dave, want to ask you, we touched on the East earlier. You talked about Milwaukee being kind of among everybody else in the East right now. What about the Celtics, which they, you know, they went out and blew out Milwaukee previously, you know, recently. They have some problems. They have some limitations on their side, but they've won 7 of their last 10. Could Boston be that challenger to Milwaukee? Or if not, what are kind of their limitations right now?
Well, I mean, Boston could certainly do it. We just saw him do it last year. Biggest issue that they've got is that Robert Williams has not looked like the Robert Williams from last season. He has not been the game changer for them. He's not been healthy, which is part of that, right? Like, he hasn't been out there enough. I feel like he needs more reps, but the season's basically over. So, like, this is very much about Robert Williams. And then a little bit of it is about their offense. I just think their offense tends to fall apart late in games. And we know in the playoffs, you know, you can't just rely on shot making, especially if you don't have a ton of elite shot makers. And Jason Tatum certainly hit some shots, but he certainly has cold stretches as well. I mean, he's a bit of a streaky shooter for a star. So I think they've got some issues there. They tend to lean into a lot of jab steps and pull-up jumpers late. Not a lot of connectedness there, but having Derek White on the court for them has been a net positive. He got a little dinged up in the game last night, so hopefully that's not an issue for them going forward. But Derek White's a game changer for them come playoff time in this role that he's been playing. I think if they lean into Derek White, they've got every opportunity to make it back to the finals. But Derek White is super important to them, and I worry that he doesn't get, especially in crunch time, that he doesn't get enough run. But there's no reason that they can't if Robert Williams is 100%.
You mentioned the Knicks at the beginning of this conversation. Last year, they averaged about 106 a game. This year, they're at almost 116 a game. It's hard to believe that a team coached by Tom Thibodeau could actually be scoring this amount of points per game. But I feel like Tibbs has adjusted. The Knicks have been a fun story this year. And as someone that's watched them just be so bad from an organizational standpoint to a lottery team year after year, it's been fun. And the question is, how much fun will this go in the postseason? Will this be a team that can go 2-3 rounds deep? Could they be in the Eastern Conference Finals, or will this be an early exit at the hands of the Cavs?
Look, my head says that the Cavs are better because the Cavs defense is excellent. And I mean, when you've got two interior defenders like Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, it just makes everything hard. Now, the difference is that the guard defense for Cleveland, while better than, you know, Donovan Mitchell's played much better than he did in Utah defensively. Darius Garland has improved. They still are kind of small, and so are the Knicks guards, which actually matches up well, better for the Knicks, in my opinion, because they rely on quickness and speed, and I think that the Knicks are going to be able to get into the paint. It's just, I don't think you're going to be able to finish around the basket. And I worry about the Knicks being a little bit too small inside to deal with the Twin Towers, to be honest with you. Mitchell Robinson and Julius Randle play bigger than they are, but there's a certain point where, and especially in the playoffs, where the big guys are just bigger, and you can't do that much. I mean, these are two elite big men, and they're going to stretch them out too. So I think that they can score. I just don't know if it's going to be repeatable come playoff time, because Cleveland's defense is top tier in the NBA, and when you're trying to attack that sort of defense, or you want to win 4 out of 7 games, it's just going to be tough. I don't know if they've got the dogs to win the race at this point. They're developing though. This Knicks team rightfully has surprised us with how improved they are, especially on the offensive end. But a lot of that is Emmanuel Quickley has been better. Julius Randle's playing like he did 2 years ago. You know what I mean? This is players improved. We can give a lot of credit to Tom Thibodeau for, you know, pushing the right buttons. But the players have actually gotten better for the Knicks. Quentin Grimes is a good story for them. You know, R.J. Barrett has been better. Even Obi Toppin finally getting some playing time and having a chance to show that he can play. So this is sort of a natural progression for the Knicks. And I'm leaning Knicks because you're a Knicks fan. But it's a natural progression for the Knicks. I think next season they're going to be better. So I don't know if they get out of the first round. But I think, obviously this is a step in a positive direction.
Dave, Joel Embiid dropped 52 against the Celtics earlier this week. Now BetMGM has Joel Embiid's odds as minus 600 to win the MVP. If he wins it, is that the right call? Would you side with that as well, or would you go a different route for the MVP?
So I'm not a gambler, so you'll have to explain. Does that mean he's favored to win? Or
big
not?
Time favorites, yeah.
Yeah, it means you bet 600 to win 100 is what it means.
Oh, well, that sounds like a bad bet in my opinion, but a good bet, I guess, if you just want to win $100. Look, part of this is, people are starting to put out their ballots. People are starting to talk openly about who they voted for MVP. And I think that, there are people that aggregate this stuff throughout the season. You know, us in the media that kind of run our mouths every day, all day, as you guys know, we lose track of things we say. We don't think people are paying attention, but I'm pretty sure gambling people are paying attention. So it feels like the public sentiment after that game sort of shifted to Embiid won the MVP. And it happened to coincide with Jokic having an absolutely dreadful game against the Rockets. Made it look like he was trying to throw the MVP race, to be honest with you. And I don't want to get into the conspiracy theory there, but he certainly was playing down, let's just say, to his competition. So, I don't know, man. It feels like a pretty good bet. Of the people that I've talked to, it's Embiid or Jokic. I'm the only one saying Giannis, and I'm okay with that. But it's either Embiid or Jokic, and it is feeling like the tide is sort of shifting toward Embiid.
When you open the Athletic app, go to listen. You'll see the podcasts. There's a ton of them, and you'll be able to catch Dave DeFore, who you can follow on Twitter at DaveDeForeNBA. Really enjoyed the conversation. It's great having you back, and let's make this a little more frequent thing. You're too good not to have you on more often.
Hey, listen, I'm happy to be the playoff correspondent. I can pop in every week or two. You've got my number.
We'll make good use of it. Great to hear from you, Dave. Thanks again. Good to talk to you.
Absolutely.
Dave DeFore, as we continue here on Sports Talk. Plenty more coming up right after KVIE News. It's next, 600 ESPN El Paso. We continue here on Sports Talk. Don't forget, Mike Greenberg coming up to begin our 5 o'clock hour. That's Greeny. Excited about his brand new book that just came out on Tuesday. It's called Got Your Number, The Greatest Sports Legends and the Numbers They Own. It's an awesome book, by the way. This is really cool. I want Joel to read this. I want to give this to my son and let him get a chance to get into this because I think he'll really dig it when he gets to read the numbers and what it's all about. It's a good history book.
Right. It's a perfect primer to kind of get all the legends in all of sports in just a one-stop shop book. And I thought this was an excellent read right here from Mike Greenberg. And it's going to be great to talk to him here at the top of our next hour.
Absolutely. And then after that, Jadrian Taylor will be with us. Remember, Jadrian Taylor, part of Shake and Bake. With Praise Amehule. We'll talk to Jadrian about his pro day, how it went. We'll also talk about a football camp that he's going to be having this weekend, which I think a lot of you will want to hear about because this is going to be very cool. It's an El Paso football camp with Jadrian Taylor, and they're already calling it a one-of-a-kind football training session involving all ages. So I'm looking forward to this, to see how this happens.
Me too. It's going to be happening out at El Paso High, which is great, and right by UTEP. And Jadrian Taylor heading off, probably in the coming weeks to get ready really for the draft and all the pre-draft process afterwards and all of that. So it'll be great to talk to him here.
Boy, he's looking more and more like an El Pasoan. Have you noticed now? He's got like the you know, the J.R. Ewing cowboy hat on. Next thing you know, he's probably got some boots and everything else. It's good to see that after all these years, now you know, he looks like somebody that's probably spent his whole life living in El Paso. That's good.
You know what? I'll tell you this, Steve. I can tell you with certainty that he has worked with our friends at 1836 Boot Company. For some boots on his end. So, yeah, he's got to bring a little Lufkin, Texas here to El Paso, Texas.
He actually has been working with 1836, really?
That's right. That's exactly right.
All right. I like that. Matter of fact, that's good. That's, hey, for those of you that don't know, 1836, that's custom boots, and they're made right here in El Paso. And I'll tell you this much, not only are they custom, they're very comfortable. I own a pair of 1836 boots. It's a special pair. It's a UTEP pair. I've got a pick on there. And they are as comfortable as it gets. And by the way, I have not worn a pair of boots in 40 plus years until I got into these 1836 boots. So I'm excited about that. Love the fact that Jadrian's wearing them too. Jadrian looks good. He's got sunglasses on, even though he's in an indoor studio. That's nice too. I didn't realize there's so much glare from the sun that's shining here in the studio. But hey, maybe he's got sensitive eyes. And if he has sensitive eyes, wear those sunglasses. They look good on him. So we'll talk to Jadrian in about half an hour at 5:20, right after we get done with Mike Greenberg from ESPN for his new book, which, again, is called Got Your Number, The Greatest Sports Legends and the Numbers They the numbers they Own. I'm even going to let Jadrian check that book out, and who knows, maybe there'll be a volume 2 down the road, and he'll be included for some reason. You never know.
Yeah, he could be 11. You know, sometimes that might be a difficult number. You know, if we're gonna go a volume 2 of this book, so he could go 11 or something like that. I like your thought here, Steve. This is good stuff. Isaiah Thomas was the first 11 here in this book.
Isaiah, nah, you know, Isaiah Thomas is no big deal anymore. No, we could have Jadrian Taylor top that. I think that'd be fine. I would be enjoying that. Meanwhile, Fernando Tatis Jr. will be back in his rehab for the Chihuahuas tonight. Game 3 of their 6-game series against the Sacramento River Cats. Little controversy last night. Tatis went yard, and the guy who gave up the home run called him out on social media as a cheater.
Yeah.
By the way, this is the first time that I can ever remember, okay, that Cade McClure, he was the pitcher who gave up the home run and called out Tatis. It's the first time he's ever been mentioned in a sports story because he's never made it to the big leagues. He's in AAA right now. And let's be honest. I mean, Fernando Tatis Jr. is pretty well accomplished so far in baseball. And, you know, this is probably something that's going to happen more often than not.
I feel like that's the case. I just feel like, you know, if you're going to talk the talk, if you're going to call somebody a cheater, at least be somebody who's at the show. At least somebody who's at the highest level of this game, not somebody who's a journeyman in minor league baseball. And no, you know, I'm taking a personal shot to him. It's no knock to other minor league players. I'm saying here, know your place. Understand where you're coming from. And I get that Fernando Tatis Jr. cheated. Everybody's going to come at him, and he's going to have to, you know, take the brunt of all this criticism coming his way.
By the way, he deleted the tweet. Why? I mean,
scared.
Well, what's the point? Everybody knows you said it. Own it. Keep the tweet and keep it up there. Why delete it?
Scared. His organization told him to do so. And yeah, it's a sign to me of somebody who just shouldn't be saying things like this in the first place.
You're right. So, again, looking forward to seeing Tatis. We'll be in El Paso starting next Tuesday with the Chihuahuas. Should be terrific. All right, big 5 o'clock hour. As we mentioned, Mike Greenberg, Jadrian Taylor. Stay with us. Sports Talk continues right here, 600 ESPN El Paso. And welcome back as we continue here on Sports Talk. Loving the fact that we get a chance to talk with Mike Greenberg on his brand-new book, Got Your Number, The Greatest Sports Legends and the Numbers They Own. And you listen to Greeny in the mornings, and now he joins us here on the program today. First off, I'm thrilled you're doing well health-wise. That's the most important thing, and happy that you're able to join us on the book tour. Congratulations, and again, how are you?
That's so nice of you to say. Thank you. And I must say, I mean, I've been so touched by how many really nice notes
I'm doing great. The procedure that I had that you're referring to, for anyone who doesn't know what you're talking about, while it was not a small one, it was not a frightening one. It was probably a little scarier sounding than it actually is. The words cardiac ablation sound a lot worse than they actually are. So I was laid up for about a week there, but I feel much better. And in a few weeks, I should feel better than I have in years. So I'm doing great, and I really appreciate the thought.
It's good to hear. Meanwhile, Got Your Number, a book that has just come out, and a lot of our listeners will be looking to add this to their collection here this year. A fun one, because you break down numbers really from zero all the way to 100, and it's not necessarily uniform numbers. You've got streaks, you've got years. It's interesting to see how you've been able to try and put this together and also create a lot of debate among the sports world.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I've been thrilled. The book came out Tuesday, and I've been just delighted with the way people are reacting to it, and you're right. So when I first had the idea to do it, I thought I would just use jersey numbers. Who is the greatest number one, the greatest number two, the greatest number three, all the way through? And then I sat down with Pembo, who has been doing my research for me for 15 years and is the best, and we quickly realized we're about to write a book about the greatest sports legends that doesn't include Muhammad Ali or Tiger Woods or Serena Williams or Billie Jean King, and that doesn't make any sense at all because they played sports in which you don't have uniform numbers. So we figured out that we could find ways to attach numbers to players, both those from individual sports. So, for example, Michael Phelps is in the book because he won 28 Olympic medals, which is more than the next two all-time most decorated Olympians combined. And then even some of the team athletes have different numbers. So, like, for example, this is a good illustration that I use. If you were to ask 100 sports fans, what's the record for most points scored in an NBA game and who holds it? I would guess almost all of them would be able to say, well, it's Wilt Chamberlain with 100 points. And then if you ask them all, what uniform number did he wear? I bet you most of them don't know that he wore the number 13. So we gave 100 to Wilt Chamberlain because we thought he owned that one. We thought he was more associated with that. So that's the idea of what the book is, and we take it from 1 to 100 with exceptional research that Hembo did. I promise no matter how knowledgeable a sports fan you are, you will find things out in this book you absolutely did not know.
I love the fact also that you paid tribute to Vin Scully, gave him number 67 for the 67 seasons he broadcasted Dodger baseball, which is a nice tribute to broadcasters that are even in this book.
You know, I think what I wrote was that you could make an argument that Vin Scully touched the lives of more American sports fans than any other person in the history of our country. Obviously, it's very hard to compare the impact that an announcer has on an audience relative to a player. I can't sit here and say he's a more important figure in baseball history than Babe Ruth or Willie Mays or people like that, but I think he certainly deserves a place in something like this. And so he's there sort of representing all the great broadcasters of which I think he deserves to be considered the greatest that we've ever had.
Mike, you feature a ton of football players in this one and some excellent legends in the game. One of the ones that stuck out to me that maybe the new generation doesn't remember how elite and outstanding he was your number 80 recipient in Jerry Rice. You wrote that a strong argument could be made that he could be the best player of all time.
Absolutely. I mean, the records he set that will never be approached are ridiculous. The distance between him and whoever you would consider to be the next best wide receiver of all time is a chasm. I mean, it's about as wide as could possibly be. I just turned to the chapter as you were saying that. The number of records that he held and holds to this day is ridiculous. He's the only player in history to catch 3 touchdowns in a Super Bowl. He did it twice. He scored 48 points in his Super Bowl career. The next highest among non-kickers is 30. He's a 2-time offensive player of the year. All other wide receivers in history have combined to do that twice. The list is as long as your arm of things he did that not only did no one else do, but no one else is ever going to do. So, yeah, I think Brady is the greatest winner that football has ever had, but I think the most dominant individual player has got to be Jerry Rice.
Mike Greenberg joining us here on Sports Talk, along with Hembo, the authors of Got Your Number, The Greatest Sports Legends and the Numbers They Own. It's out now, and you can pick it up wherever fine books are sold. I'm wondering, was there one number in particular while you were putting this project together that you agonized over? Because there were so many options, you really had a hard time coming up with who would own that number.
Yes. I think the hardest decisions we had to make were 4, 21, and 32. So let me give you a quick taste of that, if I may. So number 4 was Bobby Orr, Brett Favre, and Lou Gehrig. If this is your book, who owns that number?
Lou Gehrig.
See, and I think that has been probably the most criticized one that we've done. I don't know if that's exactly the right word, but the one that people have disagreed with me the most. I gave it to Bobby Orr, and I will tell you why. That I agree more people associate the number 4 with Lou Gehrig, even 80 years after his death, than associate it with Bobby Orr, who is still alive. However, if you look at the actual totality of their careers, and Gehrig is the greatest first baseman that ever lived and one of the greatest players ever, Bobby Orr is definitively the second greatest hockey player that ever lived and probably changed the game more than any player ever did, including Wayne Gretzky, who was the greatest player ever. And I think to not ink, so we gave it to Bobby Orr, I think not to give it to him when the magnitude of his greatness, I think, just exceeded that of Gehrig, notwithstanding the legend that Gehrig was and remains and deserves to be. But I am admitting on these airwaves that was the hardest decision that I had to make, because the idea of not giving number 4 to Lou Gehrig, the luckiest man in the face of the earth and everything else that comes with him, was, it was excruciating, to be completely honest with you. That was the hardest decision we had to make. 21 was also a brutally tough decision to have to make. 21 is Tim Duncan, Deion Sanders, and Roberto Clemente. What do you think?
Oof, it's tough. That's tough. I have no problem with Clemente. The other two, Duncan for basketball and Deion for football, I could see, but I'm okay with Clemente at 21. But then again, I just picked, you could tell what sport I'm gravitating to, because I just picked the Iron Horse at 4.
And in this case, we did go with Clemente, and it is actually sort of for the inverse reasoning that I had on my Bobby Orr pick, which is I decided that the careers of Clemente, Duncan, and Sanders were too close to call. I couldn't separate one of them and say this one was definitively the best. But what I could say is that in the entire history of the sport, Roberto Clemente is one of the 5 most important people in baseball history. The contribution that he made, he is the godfather, the grandfather, whatever term you want to call, of Latin American baseball. The contribution that he made in that regard is impossible to overstate. I don't know how many fans know this, but baseball's equivalent of the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, the Humanitarian Award, is the Roberto Clemente Award to this day because of the philanthropic contributions that he made in his life, up to and including the way that he died. So I went with Clemente there in the closest of calls. But that's, so when you ask me how hard were some of these decisions, that's an illustration of how hard some of them were.
I love it. And 32, again, you went with Jim Brown. Could have been magic. I like the fact you went with Jim Brown, because a lot of people might not realize he wore that number. They know 32 is magic. They might not realize it, and this educates them, which is what this book is all about. Got Your Number, The Greatest Sports Legends and the Numbers They Own, from Mike Greenberg. We could spend 3 hours debating this book. We only have a few minutes. Hey, we appreciate you giving us some time, and again, congratulations on the terrific book.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Thank you, everybody, for your interest in this. I'm just getting a note that says that Amazon is doing a special on it right now. If you go to Amazon.com and order Got Your Number, I think they're doing a special price, which is an indication of how well we have started. So my gratitude to everybody who has supported this project is just overwhelming. And thank you very much, guys, for having me on.
Man, Adrian, that was so, so good with Greeny coming on and giving us the lowdown on Got Your Number, The Greatest Sports Legends and the Numbers They Own. As you've looked at the book, which number really stands out to you? Is there one that you prefer when it's all said and done?
You know, I think there are a lot of people out there who would just look at the page 12, get excited about Tom Brady. Page 23, get excited about Michael Jordan. I went all the way to page 97. Now that it's Masters Week, we're talking Masters golf all week long, and Tiger Woods being recognized at that position for being not only one of the best to do it in the sport of golf, but just somebody who could break through culture in this sport and be such a figure and legend. That one really intrigued me.
You know, it's so interesting, too, because 33 could have been Bird, but it's Jabbar. 32 could have been Magic, and it's Jim Brown. But 79 turned into Bird and Magic because in 1979 they had that epic NCAA championship game, which launched their careers. And probably that was my favorite when you start to really look at it.
Yeah, that's what just shows you how innovative this book really is. I love all the graphics too. There's illustrations throughout and block quotes as well. So really good stuff all here by Mike Greenberg.
Fantastic. And again, get that book on Amazon, folks, especially that the special is on for you right now. It's called Got Your Number. Hey, we're going to come back and talk to Jadrian Taylor, one of our favorites. He'll be with us in our studios in just a minute as Sports Talk continues. But first, let's swing it back right now to Charlie One, who's standing by with this traffic update. 17 past the hour on the program. Thanks to Mike Greenberg for joining us. He's Adrian Broaddus. I'm Steve Kaplowitz. And oh, I'm happy with our next guest. He looked so good when he came in. He's got his cowboy hat, his boots, his sunglasses, his UTEP Nike, UTEP football shirt, which won't even be allowed to be worn anymore because now they're going to be going Adidas. So that shirt is now just going to be a memory. Yep. I am talking about one half of Shake and Bake. He is the one, the only, Jadrian Taylor. Great to see you back, JT. How you doing?
Glad to be back, man. It feels good to be back on here, man. I feel good, too. You know what I mean? Hamstring healing up good, so everything going good.
That's terrific. By the way, you've been here now a few years. I like the look. Do you like the appearance of being like a Texan? Do you like the cowboy hat and the boots? Are you enjoying that?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. That's how everybody – how most people dress where I'm from anyway. So it feels good to, you know, to represent where I'm from and everything and kind of put on for my city.
Well, first off, it's a beautiful cowboy hat you have. Those are gorgeous hats. And the boots, I understand, from 1836 Boot Company is also doing really well. Congratulations there.
Thank you. Got the custom ones with the East Texas with the camo on it. Yeah.
Oh, Adrian, you got a big grin on your face, don't you?
I really liked the look. I got to see these behind the scenes, and the boots themselves look great. So I'm happy that you got a good you're working with them, and you got some nice boots.
Fantastic, man. It's great boots.
Now, catch me up on what life has been like for you since the last game of the season. You've been busy. We've got about 4 or 5 months worth of catch-up to do. Tell me a little bit about what's been happening with you.
So, of course, I went to go train and everything for my pro day. I went to Houston to go train with the speed guru, Derek Blaylock. So I went to go train for him for a couple months, you know, and then I was doing good, you know, 4.3s, 4.4s, everything going good. I come to my pro day March 21st when I first came back down here. And everything was going good. I PR'd on pretty much everything, 36 vertical, 22 reps on bench, 9 for broad jump. Then on my 40, that's when I pulled my hamstring and stuff. So I'm still healing up from that.
Now, how many 40s did you end up running before you pulled? Did you pull on your first try or second try?
So the first one was against the wind, and I ran a 4.6. And then the second one was going to be with the wind, and that's when I pulled it, like around 30. And I still ran a 4.6 on that one, though, even though I pulled my hamstring.
Wow. So you pulled a hammy. You still finished with a 4.6. Do we kind of know that when you run against the wind – and by the way, for those people that don't remember, it was windy on UTEP Pro Day.
20 mile per hour.
First off, it's always windy on UTEP Pro Day. It is. It's ridiculous. We have got to figure out how to either put a bubble on Glory Field or give you some kind of indoor facility for the purpose of this Pro Day just to make it easier for you.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I feel like it put the players in the best predicament to where they can excel and show their athleticism, you know what I mean? So I wish we did have an indoor and everything. I feel like that'll help.
Jadrian, I know that for you, it's a disappointing finish because of what ended up happening, but it wasn't disappointing for working as hard as you did throughout the Houston speed training and everything else leading up to it. So where's your head at right now? How confident are you going into this process knowing what you've done throughout your career at UTEP really speaks for itself as far as all the accolades you received?
Yeah, most definitely. I feel like if I didn't, put as much as I did together this season, I would be like more in a panic, mode. Although it did hurt my feelings and everything, it was sad whenever I pulled my hamstring stuff. I didn't get to show my 4-4 and everything, but I got 9.5 sacks, 6.5 the year before that. First team all conference and everything. First team all Texas. So I feel like my film gonna back up anything I can do in a pro day.
Was there anything left to do besides that last 40 that you did not get to do as a result of the hamstring pull?
So I was going to do my 5-10-5 drill, which I also do good at, and my L drill after that. And then after that, it was going to be position work.
So you need to do the position work, which is probably the thing that really you wanted to show just how good you are at that position.
Exactly. I wanted to do my linebacker drills and stuff, edge rush drills and everything, put everything together. Because I know I can move good. I'm athletic enough to, impress anybody. So it sucks I didn't get to do that.
Is that where you profile best in the pros as either an edge rusher or a linebacker?
Yeah, I'm definitely an outside linebacker, edge rusher type deal, you know what I mean? So kind of like a Hassan Reddick, James Houston, everything, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That's what I'll be doing.
Where do you feel more comfortable, in a 3-4 scheme, a 4-3 scheme, or could you kind of play a little both?
I actually like both. I can't say which one I like the most, honestly. I think both really I can excel at. So I feel like 3-4, a lot of teams run 3-4, so I'll probably be in that type of defense most likely, but I'm good with both.
Did you run a 4-3 exclusively here at UTEP?
No, it wasn't at UTEP. It was in Houston.
Okay.
There's videos out. You can time it on your phone, on your timer, anything. You can time it. So it was a 4-3-8, and then I ran a 4-4-6 on my first one.
No, I mean the actual schemes. The schemes at UTEP. The scheme you ran at UTEP defensively was most of your years here was what?
So my first year, we was in a 3-down.
Okay.
Then the past 2 years,
it moved you to a 4-down.
That's what I
thought.
And I was more like a stand-up linebacker on the edge every time, praise with a true DN, and mm-hmm. I was like the drop is what they call it, a drop.
Is it almost like a hybrid position, basically?
Yeah, a hybrid position, yeah.
All right. Just out of curiosity, and this is just for my personal knowledge more than anything else, who's going to be that guy this year for UTEP? Who do you understand is probably going to fill your void and be that guy that's going to take your spot on the 23 minors?
So my backup last year is Mo Westmoreland.
Okay.
So he's coming in to be a starter now, number 0. Yeah, I know it's number 0, you got to be good to have number 0. So
you do. I like Mo, by the way. I like him a lot.
Yeah, very athletic, very athletic. So he coming in to take that spot up. And I feel like he's gonna do great this year. You know what I mean? And Utah got a lot of good pieces. That I went to a couple practices. I seen how the defense is flying around and everything. It's gonna be a good year again.
Jadrian, with this team coming up, next year, specifically for you, you're hanging up the number 11 for UTEP. Would you like to keep that number in the future, or what are some other numbers that you'd like to chase after?
I would love to keep number 11, man. That'd be great. But it's I like 12. I had 12 in JUCO. What else? 9. I always like 9. And of course, 0. I like 0. 0, good number. I ain't want to, change my number, but 11, mm-hmm. definitely number 1 on the list.
By the way, on UTEP's current roster, safety Oscar Moore, who is from Eaton, Texas, in Kilgore College, he's wearing number 11 right now, along with backup quarterback Cade McConnell. So the fun part about UTEP is they have so many guys on the roster. A lot of these numbers are shared by both offense and defense.
Yeah, I like that. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be like, we call it like football twins. Like, whenever we out there, we're like twins and everything. But Oscar definitely going to represent the number how it should be. He's fiery safety out there. He's hard hitting. So
was he there last year?
No, he just got there this year. Just got to UTEP this year.
All right.
So he was at Kilgore last year. You know, he watched his highlight. He out there booming stuff, man. He's going crazy.
Yeah.
Going back to the pro day, Jay Dream, we talked about this off air. You have a lot of former former miners who participated in pro day as well. Who shined in your eyes for some of your former teammates?
I definitely like the way Ron came out. AWOT, 4.4, 5.40, good vertical, good broad. Everything was good. So he definitely has some good numbers out there.
By the way, I'm also wondering if and I heard Gavin Beckley kicked the ball pretty good.
Given
Gavin's college career at UTEP, I'm hoping somebody will give him a chance to try to kick in the pros.
Yeah, I think the Cowboys should, me personally.
I agree with
you. I think the Cowboys should give him a boy Gavin. That'd definitely be a good fit. You're going to get a foreign athlete. And people don't know how athletic Gavin is, for real. Like, he's really athletic. Like 5'10", 5L drills, 40s. If he would have did all that, he would have been fast.
People look at kickers, and sometimes they don't take them seriously because all they do is look at the leg, and that's it. They don't ever think that these are guys that are athletes that could play the game and play ball. But Gavin looked like somebody who, if he needed to, would be able to mix it up a little bit.
I think he could play like a receiver type deal if he had to play anything else. Like, he definitely athletic, man, I'm telling you.
Well, hey, about this? We just had Mark Ramos and Josh Sloan on the show earlier this week. Had a lot of fun with them. Sloan said he wants to boom people. That was his word. He uses that because he said that, he grew up playing in Australia, Australian rules football, so he's been wanting to get a shot at somebody off of a punt. And, you know, a lot of the times they fair catch, so you can't take a shot, but he's waiting for that opportunity to try and drill somebody during a game. I like that attitude.
We seen Sloan boom somebody, make them fumble in the game.
Yes.
You know what I mean? We seen it firsthand. Sloan is super athletic, too. I feel like he a safety because he got that mindset where he want to hit. He want to hit you. So he'll definitely be a good safety if he wasn't a kicker, punter.
You mentioned Mo Westmoreland a moment ago. Jadrian Taylor with us here in our 600 ESPN El Paso studios, now sponsored by River Oaks Properties and Schoolyard Sports. I'm curious about one thing here, JT, and that is Praise did not have a big statistical year last year. A lot of times he was dealing with double and triple coverage, and he didn't break through the way everybody expected him to. Do you see Praise, your partner in crime, going out there almost on a mission next year, wanting to show everybody what he truly is capable of when he gets under, you know, when he gets there on the line of scrimmage?
Most definitely. I honestly, like, playing with him and then going to go look at the stats, it didn't show nothing like he played. Like, when you're watching the film, you turn on the film, he playing his heart out. He everywhere. He flying across the field. He's getting tackles. He's making plays. He's spilling the ball. Like, he's doing everything he's supposed to be doing. So I thought he had a great year, me personally, but then you look at the stats, it doesn't really show. But sometimes the stats just don't show. Got to watch the film.
That's true.
Jadrian, when it comes to just the mental preparation for this offseason, and now that you get to watch this UTEP team from afar, you're realizing that you're turning into the professional athlete and you know, pursuing your football dreams. What's the mindset like when you're having to kind of switch your mindset from, hey, everyday college football player, to now this is about my business instead?
Yeah, so in regards to my team and my former teammates, I'm just trying to be a mentor, you know, trying to show them how it's supposed to be done and everything. So when I go to practices, I try to, you know, get a little speech into the D-line at least, you know, get something going with them, you know, just talking to them, being a leader, still got to be a leader and everything. So right now I'm just trying to be like a good example, set a good example for them.
at the same time as you're around, you're still looking at yourself professionally and looking at what will happen following April with the draft and then minicamp starting up, right?
Yes, sir. Just waiting on that call, man. That's all I need, one chance.
More with Jadrian Taylor as we continue here on the show. But first, let's get right back to Adrian. He's standing by with this bottom of the hour SportsCenter update. We're back right now with Jadrian Taylor, who's here along with Sierra, who unfortunately Sierra is not on the microphone with us today. But I'm having a good time with her. She's very talkative, yeah. Like you, and you know, she's got a pretty good story too, doesn't she?
Yeah, shout out to my girlfriend, man. I know y'all can't see my skin right now, but she got my skin right. She's an esthetician, you know. Got her own business, Better Skin by Sierra on Instagram. You know, I'm gonna put the name in the. Matter of fact, she's in the stream right now. She can comment on it. Comment on her Instagram right now. She's going to get you a good facial in. Come get the skin looking right. You want to be beautiful like me.
Better Skin by Sierra, huh?
Better Skin by Sierra.
On Instagram. As an esthetician, how many times do you get facials? I'm just curious about that.
Whenever she needs a test dummy or something, whenever she's trying to try something new or add something to her bag or anything, she come to me. You just give me a facial, you know, just try it on me.
Well, first off, your face looks very smooth. Congratulations. Sierra's doing a good job. Do you even need to shave, or are you one of these guys that if you shave, it like you can go like a week and you don't get any hair growth? How does that
be? I've never shaved.
You never shave?
Never shaved in my life.
Serious?
I'm not a hairy guy, man.
You're lucky. You know what? Let me tell you what you are. You are an esthetician's dream is what you are. Yeah. Males don't have. I wish I could say this, but yeah. I shaved this morning and it's already getting ready to grow back, and it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon, my friend.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's crazy. I think it's genetics or something, because I just don't have a hairy family. Nobody really just, you know, bearded up.
That's good. There's nothing wrong with that. A beard is a pain, and you know, you don't have to deal with that. That's good. You're a very, very lucky individual, and I understand that you found a new eating spot, right?
Yeah, MD305, man. I just left there maybe 20 minutes ago. Great food, great soul food. Definitely the best soul food in town. Like, you know, El Paso not known for its soul food, but they got a good soul food, and it's in town. It's right here on Mesa.
It's right, like right next to us, right? Like pretty close.
Yeah,
by.
We can walk there right after this. Y'all want to, man?
Well, by the way, Adrian, fried chicken, fried pork chops. I understand you have catfish also. A wow. Lot of good drinks. Well, you're drinking something like that right
daiquiris,
now?
Daiquiris and stuff.
Daiquiris. Yeah.
Nice.
Look at this.
I love it. Hey,
unbelievable.
I went in there, got the oxtails, then I got the fried catfish with the oxtail juice on it.
You know what? Yams. How do you always you find these places? Or they find you? How does it work?
I've lived here my whole life, and I haven't heard these places like you.
So the first one, I think Adrian put me on.
Adrian probably hooked you up with the King's Barbecue.
Adrian put me
on
the Kings. Definitely. You know, this one's more on me. You know, I just was on Instagram. I seen one of those places. I said, man, where is that at? I ain't never seen nothing. You don't see nothing like this in El Paso. It's definitely different. Like. The owners are from Florida, so it's like a whole different, you know, type of soul food and everything. So www.md305.com.
Actually, you know, you want to know what the website is I'm looking at? ElPasoSoulFood.com.
So hey, best soul food in town.
Look at that. MD305. Very nice. So that's good. Now, also, you've got a camp coming up this weekend. That was the big reason, you know, we've had you on for 15 minutes. We haven't even talked about the camp yet, yeah. So our apologies. But
no, we get to talking.
You've got a football camp happening this weekend at El Paso High. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so I'm, you know, just like any other camp I've been doing, you know, coming out there, getting these kids better, getting these kids the lessons they need to learn for football and, you know, being a better pass rusher. Most definitely getting their pass rushing game up. And I feel like every defender on the field needs to learn how to pass rush. I don't care if you're a corner, safety, pass rushing is something that anybody on defense needs to learn, you know, especially at a young age. If I would have known all these moves at a young age, it would have been – I've been a whole different player, you know what I mean? So I'm teaching all these kids these moves and everything, and I'm getting them prepared for the next level, you know what I mean? So Saturday, 11 to 12:30.
El Paso High.
El Paso High.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all know my Instagram, big.camo, camo with a K. Y'all go to the link is in my bio where you can sign up for the camp. It's coming up Saturday, I'm telling you. You will not be disappointed.
I like this. And by the way, this is for football players at all ages, all levels, right?
All ages, all levels. I worked with kids that were 5 years old, you know what I mean, teaching them how to rush, you know. So it doesn't matter the age. It just matters your mentality. If you want to play football, come out there, and I'm going to teach you what I know.
Jadrian, you've actually had a nice group of, like, high school players who've you taken under your wing locally. How about some of the high school players or parents listening for this? What could they expect for this camp?
So I have definitely worked with a lot of high school kids, you know. The proof is in the pudding, man. Like, the kids I've been working with, you know, they've been getting offers and everything. Sack, I think Tim maybe broke the sack record at his school. I forgot. He had more sacks than me, y'all. He out there getting to that quarterback, you know what I mean? So, and he's out there consistently. So I already knew how his year was going to go before it happened. He's the only kid I've been dealing with on a consistent basis. And, you know, it shows up on the film. You know, he probably about to break his all-time sack record next year, you know what I mean? So Texas State offered him and everything. So he's definitely going to be one of those FBS edge rushers that's really going to make a difference, you know what I mean?
That's good.
It's a reason why I'm the best pass rusher in Texas, man. You know, look it up.
You can dish it out, but you can also teach it, mm-hmm. which is very important too.
Yes, I think so. That's how you know if you really learn something, if you really can teach it as well as do it.
Are you the kind of person that now that you finished at UTEP and you're looking to your pro career and life after after school here, do you want to stay in El Paso? Would you like to make this a place that you could spend a lot of time during your off seasons and live out here and continue to be an El Pasoan?
So I want to open up a training facility here. I feel like that would make a big difference in the community. I want to have a big training facility where we do workouts, football stuff. Because mm-hmm. I'm about to start actually working on this PSA gym. I forget what side of town it's on, but I'm going to post a link and everything. And I'm going to be doing speed and strength training. So it's not just football. You got to do work off the field too. So I'm about to start working there. I'm going to just start training the kids and everything, getting them right.
You talk about the now, is this the Power Sports Academy? Is that the gym you're talking about, or is it some other one?
Yes, PSA. Right.
Well, this could be, if I'm not mistaken, this could be the PSA gym out in Horizon City. So I'll have to look at that and double check, but that's very possible. Good for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited about it. You're going to put the links out there and help train and go from there, huh?
Yeah. Y'all come work out with me, man. It's the reason I'm getting big out here and everything, so.
It's a good invite. I should come out and work out. I'll pull a muscle in 30 seconds,
nah,
and that'll be the
right.
end of that.
I'm going to get you right. We ain't pulling no muscles. No, don't be like me pulling your hamstring and everything, man.
All right. I'm a little older than you, so if you can get me right, that'd be a pretty good trick. I'd like to see that. That would be good.
Jadrian, why do you like El Paso so much?
I just love the people. I love, how safe it is. I like the food. You know, it's some good food out here. You know, and I like being with my girlfriend. It's where I met my girlfriend. Got sentimental value with me, man. So, and all my brothers out here, you know, I love all them. So, it's really a lot of good in the city, and that's why I like the city, especially the views and everything. I've never seen anything like this where I'm from. Like, I'm from Crockett, Texas. There's only 7,000 people there. You know, we don't see none of this stuff, and I think it's a lot of opportunity out here as well. There's no opportunity in my city, so El Paso definitely gave me a lot of opportunities.
Well, I'm going to tell you what. We loved having you. You're one of our favorites. You've been on over the years a lot. You always bring it every time you come. We're excited. I'm super happy you got a girlfriend now. That's good for you. Mm-hmm. And take good care of Sierra. Do that and make that happen. And by the way, I've been to the website. The ElPasoSoulFood.com was the old site. The MD305 is a new site now for the same restaurant. Mm-hmm. And I realize now, guys, oxtail, catfish, shrimp, steak, pork chops, meatloaf, chicken breasts. They got everything in this place.
And they have 16 sides.
16 sides.
At all times.
What is pigeon peas?
We don't know. We just eat it.
Oh, that's good stuff. Listen,
we don't know.
Jadrian, I'm rooting for you, man. I want to see you get an opportunity to play in the NFL. I want to see you play professionally for a long time. I want to see you continue to make El Paso your home and teach everything to the youngsters. And Just again, keep in touch. It's great having you on the program. Hope you have a terrific camp this Saturday at El Paso High. And give out your Instagram handle one more time if people haven't had a chance to follow
you. So it's big.camo, and the camo with a K. Same thing as camouflage, it's just with a K.
Big.KAMO.
Yep.
And they'll get you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Come back and see us, okay?
I will.
You got it. Jadrian Taylor, folks, as we continue. 42 past. More in a moment. Sports Talk continues. 600 ESPN El Paso. The 2022-23 racing season has come to a close, but that doesn't mean we can't give you one last track talk. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Steve Kaplowitz, and joined today by the Director of Racetrack Operations. He is Dustin Dix, as we put a wrap on the live meet for this season. And Dustin, good to have you back. And man, it seems like we were just yesterday we were talking about the start of the season, and now here we are, we're already into April, and the live racing season at Sunland Park has come to a close.
You know, I don't know if it's just we're getting older or what, but it seems like these racing seasons just come and go quicker and quicker and quicker. That 55 days of racing seems like it just, like you said, Cappy, just like we just started yesterday.
It really is the case, and you know, you just had your last race day on Sunday, wrapping up what I know has been a pretty successful meet for you and for the track. And I guess if there was a chance to really kind of sum things up, Todd Fincher had a meet for the ages, didn't he?
Yeah, Todd, he won our trainer title. He had 35 wins on the thoroughbred side, and the next closest was Flacco Cappellucci at 26, and Todd just seemed to dominate our stakes races as well. He won our Sunland Oaks, won a numerous number of other stakes races, and what a great season he had, over $1.8 million in purses that he won. So very successful for Todd. And Todd's been branching out, Cappy, the last few years. He's had some success in other locations, so this was expected. He's getting some really good owners, some high-end owners, and it was great to see his performance of Flying Connections in the Sunland Park Oaks. And I know that horse is heading to Kentucky for the Kentucky Oaks.
That's terrific. And for a chance for Todd to try and win the Kentucky Oaks, that is something he has not been able to do thus far, correct?
Correct. And he was able to run the Breeders' Cup last year. He had a couple horses running the Breeders' Cup. They didn't run as well as he was hoping, but he's been knocking on the door nationally. And I think his time is coming. And for those that were here on Sunland Derby Day, Cappy, we had four, we call them open races, open stakes races. That means they're not restricted to New Mexico bred. They're open to any horses from anywhere, basically. And the Bill Thomas, Harry Henson, Sunland Park Derby, and the Sunland Oaks were all won by local connections. So that's, you know, I've never remembered that in my 21 years here at Sunland Park. Joel Maher is actually working Wild on Ice, the Sunland Derby winner. He's working the horse here at Sunland Park on Friday. And if he comes out of the work well and keeps improving like he has, they're on to Kentucky as well for the Kentucky Derby. So to have, we had the reverse of this a few years ago where Joel was going to the Oaks and Todd was going to the Derby. This year it's Todd's going to the Oaks and Joel's going to the Derby. Unfortunately, when that happened in 2019, both their horses were injured during workouts, or they had some training setbacks and they weren't able to make the race. So I'm hoping that both of them can get to those big races and perform well.
If Joel Maher gets through Wild on Ice with the workout on Friday and gets to Kentucky, would Kenny Tohill be on the mount, or would he probably go for one of the more veteran jockeys, as that race always seems to attract the best of the best from around the country?
You know, that's a great question, Cappy. That's probably a better question for Joel and his owner. But I talked to Ken in the jocks room the next day after the race, and I told Ken, I go, you're 60 years old and you're an overnight success. And he was laughing, and just a great story for Kenny Tohill. Is I would think they're going to stay with him, but you never know. That's with Mind That Bird. They switched riders to Calvin Burrell. If there's a rider they like that fits this horse, you know, you can't question that they're the ones that are making the decisions, but you'd like to see a guy like Ken Tohill get a chance to ride in the Kentucky Derby and kind of the crowning achievement of his career, and very successful jockey over the years, just hasn't had that success on a national scale. And I'm just tickled to pieces that he could get that opportunity.
Dustin Dix is with us. He is the director of racetrack operations as we wrap up the meet at Sunland Park Racetrack and Casino for this past season. Let's talk about the jockey leaders after it was all said and done. Who won the jockey title?
The jockey title on the thoroughbred side was Luis Fuentes, and Luis primarily rides for Todd Fincher, so that makes sense. Luis had an outstanding meet. Alfredo Juarez was second. Ken Tohill was third. All of them earned over $1 million in purses, so very successful for them, not only in the amount of wins, but the amount of purse money they won. And on the quarter horse side, we actually had a tie between Adrian A. Ramos and Hector Aldretti. They each had 21 wins, so to break the tie, we'd probably go with the seconds and the amount of purse money. So Adrian A. Ramos would come out on top with that. And Wes Giles was the leading trainer, and MRB Racing was the leading owners on the quarter horse side. And thoroughbred side, Judge Lanier Racing, Tom McKenna, and Sandy McKenna, another owner title on the thoroughbred side. And they're probably one of the most successful owners in New Mexico since gaming came about. So they've had success as well. They ran in the they ran on the national scale, competed in the Preakness, ran second in the Arkansas Derby a few years back with the horse named Conquest Mo Money. So it's great to see these local guys branch out, get better horses, and compete on a national scale, because that's what slot machines was supposed to do to horse racing, was to not only keep it going, but to improve it, improve the quality of horses. And I think we've seen that here, and we've seen that here at Sunland Park with the local people winning those four open races on Sunland Derby Day. So very proud of where the industry is going in that aspect.
I'm happy you mentioned the trainer title in the quarter horse division. We talked so much about what we saw this year in the thoroughbred ranks from Todd Fincher. We didn't really go into depth on the quarter horse side. Was it a close race for the trainer title, or was it as dominant as what Todd did?
It was pretty dominant with Wes Giles. He had 19 wins, and the second place trainer, Eric Valenzuela, had 12. And Wes Giles also won our West Texas Futurity with KS Little. Deuce Coupe won a lot of our big major races as well. Wes won over $700,000 in purse money, and he's one of the most successful quarter horse trainers here over the years. So this year we did something a little different, that we separated our thoroughbreds and quarter horses to separate days, and I think that worked pretty well. There's some federal legislation called HISA that kind of was a reason for this as well, because we're under federal legislation on the thoroughbred side and quarter horse, we're under the state. So it was good to split that out and to separate those days. And I think our fans, once they caught on, they enjoyed it as well. So right now we're just trying to go through the numbers and start our planning for next year and see what we decide to do for next year. It's always the questions, what are you going to do for next year? I don't know. We've just completed our meet on Sunday, but there's some things for us to consider and things for Sunland Park to look at in the future. And, you know, we just want to keep improving and keep hitting it out of the park.
Is it easier to pick up the feed when you go either all quarter or all thoroughbred for a day versus having the first five or six races for one and then moving it into the thoroughbreds, let's just say, for example, for the remainder of the race?
It is, Cappy. And why it is there's some states that aren't allowed to bet quarter horse racing. So it kind of makes it hard for the simulcast coordinators. They have to cross out races. And if there's what we call multi-leg wagers, where there's a pick three involving two thoroughbreds and a quarter horse race or vice versa, they can't take them. So it cleaned up that as well. There are several reasons for it. That was one of the reasons as well. And it seemed to work better. There's a few states that can't take quarter horse racing by law, and thoroughbreds is much more popular on a national scale. Quarter horse racing is big here in the Southwest, but everyone knows the Kentucky Derby, the All-American Futurity, everyone knows around here. But of course, the Kentucky Derby is part of our society. Everyone knows what the Kentucky Derby is. So thoroughbred racing is a lot more popular nationwide. So usually off track, we do much better on our thoroughbred races than quarter horse.
As far as, you know, well-known trainers from outside the area, I know Steve Asmussen was a big part of this meet. Bob Baffert came in for Sunland Derby weekend. You also had Doug O'Neill back as well during the year. Were you pretty happy with what you had a chance to see from just some of the best trainers around the country as they've been a part of the racing here at Sunland?
Yeah, Cappy, that's a great question. A little disappointed on Sunland Derby Day because there's some transportation issues, and I know you're well aware of them. There's a company called Tex Sutton that used to fly horses from locations here to El Paso to Sunland Park, and now it's a little harder for horses to get here because they have to van in. So something we'll try to work on next year, maybe get with some transportation companies to see if there's a way we could offset some of the vanning expense as well. But funny, I talked to Bob Baffert on Sunland Derby Day, and we have a connection because we both graduated from the racetrack program in Arizona, and we were talking, and Bob actually asked, you know, what days do you guys run? And he's like, well, I might send a string there, and I don't think he was joking. So it was pretty, you never can tell with Bob, but he seemed to be interested in, you know, what we're doing and, you know, maybe possibly running more horses here. So to get a Bob Baffert potentially running horses on a full-time basis would be great for our program. But like I said, I'm not sure if he was joking or not. It's hard to tell with Bob sometimes, but he asked some questions that surprised me.
Meanwhile, as far as the meet, it started New Year's Eve, went all the way through to the end of March. Do you like the schedule? What, 51 dates as part as live racing versus what we've seen was a longer meet in past years?
Yeah, we ran 55 days this year. We started December 30th and went to April 2nd. I'd kind of like to run a few more weeks as the weather gets nicer. I know this time of year we have a lot of winds, and winds are an issue. Sometimes we actually had to cancel races one day this meet because of winds. But I think the Kentucky Derby, I wouldn't want to run later than the Kentucky Derby, but I think there's probably, I would like to push the meet starting a little later and run a little later because of the weather and horse population, things of that issue. But that's a pretty complicated process that we go through, that it's a puzzle that there's other racetracks in the state and we all have to fit together. So it takes a lot of collaboration with the other racetracks and the racing commission. But my own personal belief is I'd like to start maybe a week or two later and run a week or two longer. I think the number of days is probably good, you know, plus or minus here and there, but I think the 55 days is probably good. And what we've talked about too is maybe even running a thoroughbred meet and then taking 2 weeks off to turn our barn area and then run a quarter horse meet. I've always wanted to try a quarter horse meet in late spring and lead it into Ruidoso because of our demographic here in El Paso. We have high concentration of quarter horse fans, and we could run twilight, run a little longer into the night, you know, with the daylight. So there's some things that I've always wanted to try. Hopefully we could get the opportunity to do it. And it's exciting. It's exciting that with our management team that they don't have a lot of racing background, that they're willing to try some of these outside the box ideas. So we'll see what happens.
Especially like a 7 or 8 week, quarter horse meet that could then go right into that Memorial Day weekend in Ruidoso, where you could essentially just transfer from one right to the other.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Maybe not that many weeks, but something maybe into like middle of May or third week of May, and then up to Ruidoso for Memorial Day. Right now, we have a little gap between when we were over, when Ruidoso's barn area opens. So we kept our track open for training this week to try to accommodate the horsemen. I'd like to shorten that gap, or even, you know, like I said, go a quarter horse meet and see what we could do. I think a Friday, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday running at 2:30, 3 o'clock, going to 7:30 would expose horse racing to a lot of people that can't get off, you know, because they're working or whatever. And I think it'd be a great thing for people to do, you know, we don't have lights, so we could go probably to 7:30 as there's more daylight. And I think that's a pretty cool idea. It's something cool for people to maybe come out and go see, you know. Yeah. get off of work at 5 and come out and have a few beers and watch the last 4 or 5 races at Sunland Park. That's how I think live racing is how we cultivate our fans, that they get exposed to the live racing, then they come for simulcasting or they come for more live days. And the cool thing I saw this year too, Cappy, is I saw a lot of new people that I've never seen before, a lot of families, a lot of young people. And, you know, we've been here since 1959, and it's great seeing the second, third, fourth generations of, you know, families, because we're such a tight-knit community, and horse racing is such a great sport for families to come out and watch. So that's one of the positives I've seen, is just a lot of families and a lot of new people here this racing season.
Great job, as always. Appreciate you and Eric coming on with us every week throughout the season. Have a terrific offseason, and before you know it, it'll be December, and we'll be cranking it up again with you.
Oh, and it goes quick, and like I said, people look out Kentucky Derby Day, and hopefully they'll see some, even this weekend, you're going to see a couple of Sunland Derby horses running in the Santa Anita Derby, so you'll get to see some horses that ran on Sunland Derby Day go out around the country, and hopefully they run well.
Terrific. Dustin, appreciate it. Thanks again.
Thank you, Cappy, and thanks to all the racing fans as well.
He's Dustin Dix, and he joins us here with Track Talk as we continue. Let's go to Charlie One. We'll come back with plenty more. 600 ESPN El Paso.